This is Santana Adams in partnership with the Kentucky Historical Society and the Kentucky Oral History Commission. This interview is taking place on 4/17/2022 at 7:46 p.m. at 1517 Irvine Street, Richmond, Kentucky. Today I will be speaking with Taylor Matthews. Today we'll be talking about media perceptions and reasons for protesting, as well as experiences that occurred during the summer of 2020. Before starting, if at any point there's any language or anything that you don't want to talk about, all you have to do is say, "I prefer not to speak about this." Guess that's all. So if you wouldn't mind to state your name, age, and place of birth.
I'm Taylor Matthews. I'm 25, and I was born in Georgetown, Kentucky.
What schools have you attended, and what is your current level of educational attainment?
Okay, so I graduated high school in Bourbon County High School in Paris, Kentucky, and then I received an undergraduate degree in chemistry at Eastern Kentucky University, and then I am graduating in a month with a master's of chemistry from Eastern Kentucky University.
And then just a little bit about your work history and your current occupation.
Okay, so I currently work for EKU as an independent research student for my PI, and I work in the lab. And then prior to that, I worked at Starbucks during the pandemic, and then 3 years before, so about 4 years on and off at Starbucks, and then I've worked as a tutor and mentor at EKU, and then before college, really just like Dairy Queen and Meijer.
Okay. So getting into the protest, in what locations did you attend a protest for the summer of 2020?
We were in Richmond, Kentucky.
Okay. What day/day did you participate in the protest of summer of 2020? If you don't know that exact date, just like a general time period.
I believe it was towards the end of the summer. It was pretty hot when we were out there, so probably July or August of 2020.
Okay. And what amount of time would you estimate that you spent at that location on the ground?
It was about 2 hours.
Did you help organize a protest, or did you help organize a group of friends to go?
A group of friends.
Okay. And how did you find out about the protest? Did social media or the news play any part in this?
It was mainly social media, so I believe it was around, like, Instagram and Facebook mainly. There was a group of just, like, saying Richmond's having a BLM movement, and so it was, like, friends of friends would share. But it was not on the news. It was just on social media.
Okay. Would you say that you regularly watch the news or no?
No.
Okay. So what made you decide that protesting was necessary? What were your personal reasons for participating?
I have friends within the community, and I personally did not grow up around many minorities in general. And I learned more through college, and so I felt it was necessary to kind of respect the people I knew personally, and also in general. I don't believe people should die for their minorities, or like their religion, or their skin color, their sexuality, or gender. And so I think it was important personally just to stand on those beliefs instead of just tweeting or talking about it, but actually showing up for the people that I care about.
Definitely. Did you have any reservations or hesitations about participating?
A few hesitations because of the larger protests in large cities where they had kind of gotten out of hand, but Richmond is a small community, and I know it's like a college-based community, so there's probably more support for 18 to 25-year-olds, and so I was not thinking it would get super out of hand. I mean, we don't have a lot of violence necessarily in Richmond related to that, so a little bit.
So the talking about the seeing some of the protests get out of hand, did you also see that on social media?
Yeah, mainly so like Twitter and Facebook.
Okay. So to get into COVID a little bit, because I think it has a lot to do with this, how had COVID-19 impacted the way that you were living your life in terms of work, school, and social life when it like first started up?
Okay, so I was working at Starbucks between graduating with my bachelor's and going into a master's program full-time, and then living with roommates, and then they kind of told us the day of that we would be not working for a week, and then as the week went on, we would not be working for 2 weeks. And then as it went on, it turned into 6 weeks that we were not allowed to go back. But I was fortunate they were paying us full time to stay at home. Shout out to Starbucks. But they paid us full time, so I got to stay home for 6 weeks. And really, that's it. And then towards the end of the 6 weeks, they kind of gave us the option, you can come back and get paid hazard pay, so you'd get maybe $2 more an hour, or you can stay home and use sick time or vacation time. But at that point, they weren't really going to be paying us anymore to stay home. So I went back after 6 weeks and worked pretty normal. I worked overtime because we were getting paid more. Mm-hmm. So.
What about school? How did school change for you?
So I graduated with a bachelor's in the spring of 2019, so things were relatively normal. And then I decided to go back during the pandemic, which I heard about through friends who were still in college at the beginning of 2020. And so when I went in, I kind of knew that things were going to be online. So I don't believe I went to campus at all unless I went to, like, the gym. And then I TA'd for chemistry labs, and so I went to campus for those. But all of my classes were essentially, the professor would voice record or record themselves doing a lecture, post it onto Blackboard, and just tell us exam dates and when things were due. For me, it was good, because I'm an independent learner already, and so I did better in that type of environment, because you get to pick and choose when you go to class and when you do your homework, and I don't have any, like, time restrictions. So it definitely was different, but personally, for the better.
Okay. And then, what kind of precautions were you taking as a person in general? Like, were you staying in more? Were you participating with masks and talking about the period before we had the vaccine?
Mm-hmm. Definitely the first few months I did not leave because I was scared, because I thought I was going to die, for lack of a better word. A lot of anxiety at the beginning. So I stayed inside, like, didn't leave, went to the grocery store, like, once every few weeks, and I really didn't want to do that, but wore a mask. And we bought, like, hand sanitizer, and then still wore a mask in public places when it wasn't required.
Mm-hmm.
And then in classes and stuff like that, we had to wear them. So mostly, like, the mask at the latter half of the year.
So you would say you were following CDC protocols for the most part?
Yeah.
How would you say that this might have changed during or after the protest? Like, these kind of, there's this change in the social world, and do you think that it changed after?
Like, just with masks, or like CDC stuff, or in general?
Just in general with COVID, like, this was one of the first massive breaks we saw in COVID-19 protocol, so did you yourself experience any changes, or did you notice a change in the experiences of people around you on protocols? Like, people loosening up or getting tighter on this?
Yeah, I think people started to loosen up. So I know, like, we had 3 people in a household, and we stayed home, except one person had to go work. And so we were still kind of at risk. But I know after that it loosened up, and so we would go to like our friend's house who lived on the same street, and that's really it. Or maybe like one or two other people, we would go to their house, and so like slowly it would be like, well, this we could hang out with this person because like they've been staying home the whole time, or like this person because we only like they only stay home with like their significant other or stuff like that. And so they like loosened up a little bit, but there was still like hesitation around it.
Okay. So of course you protested during the COVID-19 pandemic. So what made you feel like breaking public health protocols against larger public gatherings was what was needed?
I think it was just important to do, and I wasn't around people who were necessarily at the most risk. I didn't see my parents for most of the year, and then I wasn't seeing my other family members, and so I was really just around like 20 to 25 year olds who didn't have health conditions, because if they did, they had stayed inside and wouldn't go out. And so to me, it was the risk of having flu-like symptoms and people's lives and the law. And so to me, that was worth it, because if we would have just not done anything, I think things would have kept happening. And so regardless, it was important to do at the time.
Okay. So, when the protocol was being broken, did you feel like you were putting yourself or others at risk? Which I know you talked about a little bit, but, like, thinking back to the crowd that day, were protocols being followed, or did you feel like it was a risky situation? And if so, in, like, what kind of ways?
Most people had masks on, and then they did have, like, water and hand sanitizer, like, people with those. But I think everyone that was there knew the risk, and so I don't necessarily feel, like, bad about it or hesitant about going to it for those reasons, because, like, we were all there for the same reason. We were all living in COVID world, and so we all knew what we were there for and what risks were there.
Okay. So let's see. Going back to the protest, do you remember the thoughts you were experiencing the day before the protest? Like, maybe what was going through your brain, if you knew you were going in advance?
Yeah, I never... That's the first and only protest I've ever been to, and so... kind of just, like, the historical significance of it, and that, like, I can say... 20, 30 years from now, like, we were there, boots on the ground, like, we were doing something, showing up, and trying to represent, like, others, and so just kind of that, it's similar to, like, a nostalgia feeling, but, like, forward nostalgia, feeling kind of excitement, like, oh, we could actually make a change and, like, help the people around us.
Definitely. So, what about the crowd stuck out the most to you the day that you protested?
I would say the diversity between especially ages and also races. There are a lot of different people there. And that's probably the largest thing.
So I know talking to some other people who went to the Richmond protest, they had mentioned that the police department in some way came out and spoke. Were you able to witness that?
I think I remember them speaking at the courthouse, one officer. I don't necessarily remember what he said, but...
All right.
Yeah.
And then what was the atmosphere of the crowd? Like, what was the kind of energy or presence that the crowd had?
At times, somber, I would say. Like, while they were, like, praying and speaking, there was a speaker. And then at times, maybe not, I would say angry is probably a good word. And not, like, they were going to get angry at the protest, but kind of just, like, frustrated with, like, some people there had been fighting this fight for 50 years, and so kind of, like, why are we still doing this type of feeling. And then a lot of people excited for change, because there were so many different people there, and, like, that actually showed up, and it's a small town, and there was a pretty good number of people there.
Okay. Are there any particular phrases or chants that you remember hearing?
There was one. Say Their Names was one. And so I know there was, like, George Floyd, and then a couple of the other, one of the women in Louisville. But it was, like, Say Their Names, and then they had, like, the names, they would say them. And then I Can't Breathe was one, or just Black Lives Matter was one.
Okay. So, did you receive any kind of training on how to participate nonviolently or safely during the protest beforehand, whether this was an in-person training or just things that you were seeing on social media?
When we got there, there was some people giving directions, and so the police were there to block off the streets, and there was, I am assuming, the person in charge or someone affiliated with the group that put this together was just saying, like, follow the people in the front of the line and, like, don't get violent. Like, if you need water, there's water stations, like, there's extra masks and stuff like that, but it was mainly just, like, following the crowd around the streets, so it was pretty simple.
Yeah. I know there was a lot of stuff going around on social media. Did any of that come up on your feed about, like, different tactics that people were using in larger protests?
Yeah, some things. One I can remember is people saying that if they put you in a police car just to, like, go to the bathroom on yourself. Mainly as an annoyance, but, and then other things, definitely, like, the still wearing masks, like, people were still, like, go to them, but also, like, be safe. I can't really remember anything else, mainly just, like, I guess it's not necessarily, relevant to the white people, but, like, the black people like to not have your, like, hands in your pockets and things like that, which I'm assuming is a social norm for them, because I've heard that from friends, that that's just, like, what you know what to do, but especially in, like, a heated situation, just to, like, be careful about where you're reaching and what you're doing, just because people are already so angry.
Yeah. And then did the mask, to your knowledge, serve any kind of double purpose? Was it just for COVID, or was there another reason for wearing masks in those large crowds?
There were definitely other reasons, because there were some people that it wasn't just surgical masks. They would wear, like, maybe, like, Halloween, like, purge-type masks, which is scary, but a lot to, like, hide identity, maybe from, like, photos that go around social media or on the news and videos and things like that. And that was a lot of people, like, not just one, like, race wearing. It was, like, everyone.
And what do you think the need for that was? Why do you think that people felt it was so important to hide their identity in photos and videos?
Well, part of the reason would be maybe your family or friends that aren't as supportive see that, and then they start questioning you, and maybe they're not ready for that conversation just yet, but you still wanted to be there and represent what was happening. And then another is just that it doesn't really matter the person or the face or the name, but no one should be killed for the color of their skin. And so it was kind of just like it doesn't matter what they look like or who they are. Regardless, like, it still stands.
Okay. So, let's see. While you were at the protest, did you face any anti-protesters, threats of violence, or intimidation?
No.
No. Okay. So, do you specifically remember what your call to action was, not just to deem it necessary, but to make you get involved yourself? Was there, like, any pivotal moment for you? Like any conversations, anything you saw in the media, or like what was, when did the spark start? Like when did it hit, if you can remember that?
I would say I have a friend who has dealt with these things, and we had been having a conversation, and she was basically saying she was like, her brother was a similar age, and she was afraid of like similar things happening to her family members and her friends, because she, like, you never know. And at that point I was like, well, it wouldn't happen to my family, so at least I could maybe help, like, hers, because she was pretty emotional over it.
Yeah, definitely. So we know that kind of one of the big sparks in Kentucky was the death of Breonna Taylor in Louisville. So how do you understand or value the life and death of Breonna Taylor? So, like, what do you know about her life and what do you know about her death?
Sorry.
Okay.
I believe she was an EMT or some type of emergency care worker. And then lived with a significant other in the apartment. And I don't know much about her life other than those things. That's what was on the news. And then the death, what I can really remember is that it was like a search. I'm not sure if they had a warrant or not, but they didn't open the door. Shots were just fired into the apartment, or they like got in and just like started firing, and there was no like, this is the police, we want to see you. There was just like shots being fired. And then I've also heard that the boyfriend charged at them with a gun, and that's why they started shooting. But it's stayed pretty consistent that she was sleeping. And then other things, like she had, her boyfriend had a warrant, and that's why they were there, or I'm not really sure what parts are true, but it was like consistent that she was asleep and that they just kind of barged into the house, which isn't what they're supposed to do.
So just a couple other details that I want to ask about, and it's really important just to think about what you have from memory. It doesn't have to be what's actually correct. That's kind of the point of asking the questions. But do you know how many officers came to the door?
I have a feeling I saw a schematic of, like, they were at different points around the apartment, but it was, like, maybe four or five. I'm not sure.
Okay. And then, do you know the reason that they, or the reason that you remember that they had come in for the boyfriend? What were they saying the reason was?
I thought it was something to do with doing something with a firearm, or like something, like a violent something, I think.
And then how many bullets do you remember hearing were fired? Just like a general amount or specific number, just depending on what you remember.
I believe it was from like 5 to 9, maybe.
Okay. Do you remember how many were found in Breonna Taylor? Like, how many bullets were shot into her?
No, I'm not sure.
Okay. What about her death was so uniquely motivating? So we have COVID-19 going on. She's working as an EMT, sleeping in her apartment, and she gets shot. What about that made it uniquely motivating?
She was minding her business. Like, you're asleep in your home where you're supposed to feel the most safe, and like, where do you go when your home is no longer a safe space? And for anyone, let alone someone that's supposed to be protecting people, would just come into that space and take your life is frightening. And yeah.
So, around the same kind of topic, Were there other people's lives or deaths that were also meaningful to you? So I know that you had talked about your friend and their family and how it was affecting them as being kind of something that struck you, but were there other names or other cases that kind of got you to notice what was happening?
Probably George Floyd is the one I can remember most, because I feel like his case kind of started the large movement, and then it kind of more people came with his name.
Okay. And then, so, do you know, or I guess let me think how to phrase this. So if George Floyd and Breonna Taylor are kind of the first major people that you see this police brutality happening to, do you think that this is something new, or do you know that this is something that's been happening for a while, or did it take their deaths to kind of bring that to the forefront of your mind that this was happening, and then being able to look back and realize that this had happened to a lot of other people?
I think that people finally had proof of it happening, and it wasn't just word of mouth, because it's been word of mouth for a really long time, or just within those communities people know because they've seen it, but also who's going to listen to them, because why would the police be like, oh yeah, we're kind of shitty?
Yeah.
Because they said so. But it's like at a point where you have a video of it happening, George Floyd's case, circulated through social media, at that point you can't deny what's happening. And Breonna is like, she was asleep, and you have like medical examiners, you have like the coroner, you have people that go and investigate crime scenes, like saying she was asleep, like she wasn't awake and she was in her own home, and like things like that. It's just like, okay, like you can't easily mix that up. Like say someone reaches into their pocket and you're like, oh, they have a weapon, like that would be more believable as a fuck up than like she's sleeping in her bed, or there's a video of this man like begging for his life.
Yeah.
And so like you can't, at that point you can't deny it anymore.
Yeah. So would you say that living in an age of technology is kind of what's bringing it to the forefront? Like, not just cell phones and cell phone cameras, but body cam footage?
Yeah, I think so.
And to kind of bounce off of that, how do you feel about the police's use of body cams?
I think if they're used, they are, if they're turned on, I think it's really helpful. And it's not even just helpful to the public for us to know what they're doing, it's helpful in investigations. So if you go to court and try to say someone has a weapon, or like someone has drugs, or they're doing drugs, or they're running from the police, like that makes your case stronger. So why wouldn't you want that? The only reason you wouldn't want that is if you're doing things that are not good.
Okay. And then thinking back to an earlier thought, there is actually a police officer in Richmond a number of years ago who was killed on call. I can't remember exactly his police number, but he was shot walking through a door frame by a person that he was going in to take to jail. Do you think that that had any kind of effect on the way that people in Richmond were assessing the Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter kind of like mesh up? If you know anything about that, or had ever heard about that case, it would have probably been about 5 years ago.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it. So I think that's a similar thing that happens in a lot of communities, and so it's, I think both sides were kind of perpetuated by it, because I also don't believe people should die doing their job, but, I mean, like I said, it's charged on both sides. Like, it's either fuck the police, or, like, Black people are criminals, and so it's, like, there's not a lot of people, there's hard to find a middle ground with a lot of people, especially we're a small town in Kentucky, and we don't have a lot of minorities, and things like that, and so I think, yeah, it just kind of made it worse for everyone.
So, would you say that the issues are going on are more of systemic issues or, like, organizational issues within the police, or is it more at an individual level? Does it relate back to training, or what is it that you think that's being done incorrectly to cause senseless violence?
So I think part of it is education. So once you turn 21, you can go to the academy. You don't have to have any previous degrees. My dad was a police officer for 30 years. He had no college degrees. He graduated high school. When he turned 21, he went to the academy. So part of that may be an issue, and I know we're from the same town, obviously, and so I personally experienced more minorities when I went to college. And so I was around more people, so I learned a lot about different cultures. And kind of like social norms in other places, because I didn't really know these things were a problem until I left Paris. And so I think maybe people that aren't as educated and they're not around as many diverse populations, like, they're just afraid because of things that they were raised around. Like, people saying bad things about anyone that's not white is a criminal or they're bad or things like that. And so fear is probably a lot because they haven't experienced anything outside of their family and their friends. And then training could also be a part of it. It's most likely department to department, how their training goes. I know in Paris, I watched them. I grew up essentially in a police department, which is ironic. But I watched them do some training, and they would have fake guns, and they would have, like, a screen, and they would tell them, like, to pull their taser first, I know, at that department, or if you get to the point where you have the gun, you have to, like, say a certain amount of times, like, if they have the gun, like, a gun as well, you have to say, like, put the gun down, or I'm going to shoot, put the gun down, or I'm going to shoot, like, they have to say it so many times you understand what's happening, so there's no questions, but also, like, I don't know how often they do that, and I don't know what departments do that, because you could have someone, chief of police, is just kind of a dick and doesn't care, and just lets his guys have guns and go out on the streets, and so I don't know, maybe there's a better way to do it across all departments, but I don't know what that would look like.
If you could think about it, like, what kind of mitigation or what kind of training might improve the situation? Like, is there any, like, if you could add courses or add requirements to police departments that were nationwide, what do you think the best classes or educational material to add would be?
Well, part criminal justice, so you understand few laws before you are upholding them. Maybe some criminal justice, psychology, or like sociology type classes, just understanding people, and that a lot of people's actions are like fear based, like motives, if they're angry or anything. A lot of like social science type of classes, because you're going to be dealing with people day-to-day in random situations, whether that be traffic stop to, like, a raid. And so I think it'd be important to just understand how to communicate with people. Maybe a communications class,
mm-hmm.
and learning how to do that. Things like that, really.
How do you feel about harm reduction programs or being required to have a mental health advocate on particularly, like, risky calls?
I think that's important because not everyone knows how, like I said, knows how to speak to people. Like, personally, it's that if even a friend of mine was, like, going through something like that, I wouldn't necessarily know what to say because I'm not a trained professional. And so I think it would be important to have someone there that knows how to deal with high-risk, like, situations, things to do and say. That's, like, they went to school for that and know how to do that.
I specifically asked that thinking back to George Floyd's case, because later on we found out that he had struggled with mental health for a long time, and that there's really good reason to believe that he was having a mental health crisis when he died.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know if that was something that had been thought about, just if maybe a mental health care provider would have been better in that situation than someone who's trained only to use excessive force.
Yeah.
Or mostly excessive force.
I would say probably, because, I mean, if you watch the video, I don't know. I feel like any person that knows how to talk to a human being would have known that all he wanted to do was just, like, someone to listen to what he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, having people there that know how to communicate on, like, an empathetic and sympathetic level that can talk to you about that, yeah, it would have been good.
Okay. So we hear BLM a lot, but BLM is actually an organization in itself, not just a slogan. So were you involved with BLM as an organization or other organizations?
No, not really. Mainly just the slogan and, like, sharing posts as they came up.
So, even though you weren't, like, necessarily a member of BLM, how would you define and perceive what BLM goals were, if that's applicable? Like, if you know anything about what their goal or mission or anything like that was.
I don't know the specifics, but I would assume... I don't know the specifics of what their actual mission statement is.
That's alright. It's just something that's on my list to ask. This one might be interesting, seeing as you come from a police family, but how do you feel about the slogan, defund the police? Like, what does that mean to you, and how could you see that functioning? Or do you see it functioning?
I think... yeah, it definitely could. 'Cause I know a lot of departments, like, they have, like, the chargers or the SUVs or the big trucks, and, like, they're nice new vehicles, and, like, I feel like you could still do your job in, like, a 2015 car. Like, you don't need new vehicles issued to you. And to be fair with that statement as well, someone has to write a grant to get the money to buy the vehicles. So it's not just the government, like, funneling it to them. They do have to ask, but it may not be that hard after you've asked the question to, like, get the money. Or maybe, I don't know how much, like, gear and things they need. They all have personal weapons, and then there's also, like, SWAT teams that they might not use all the time, and so maybe condensing the number of SWAT teams so there's, like, regional bases instead of, like, county to county, but I'm not sure how it works. If it could be possible, I don't think anytime soon it will happen.
Yeah. Do you think that maybe instead of reducing the funding, maybe the funding could be, like, reapplied in different areas? Like, I know you're talking about potentially, like condensing some things, but if the money could be used for something else, what do you think it should be used for?
I would say education, and so maybe if you get through the academy and get a job, maybe they send you to, like, a 2 to 4 year program specifically for what you're needed there for. Or even, I know in Louisville, like, the Jefferson County Police Department, they have, like, 2 social workers that work in the department now. They have offices in the department, and so maybe funding, maybe a psychiatrist, maybe some social workers within the department, give them offices, give them resources, and let them help people. I think that would be really helpful.
Definitely. So how did participating in the protest of summer 2020 impact any of your relationships with your friends, family, or your community, whether that was good or bad?
It pulled some strings with our family because we are a police family. Like I said, my dad and my sister also works for the department as like dispatch and a clerk. So not that they were super straightforward about being upset, but they were kind of what we were talking about earlier. They were like, well, police get shot every day on the job, like, and they didn't do anything and things like that, and they're just trying, kind of being defensive. Not that I'm wrong, but they're like, but also this is happening, and it's hard to explain that's not the focus of this. Because, like, that, yes, that's also bad. I also don't believe police officers should die doing their job, but also black people shouldn't die for walking down the street.
Yep.
And so it kind of made things tense for a while, and I at times felt disrespectful towards my dad, because, like, if you do watch the news, it was kind of portrayed as, like, fuck the police, like, all cops are bastards and stuff like that, and I was like, that's not why I'm here. I'm here so my friends can live and not feel in fear of going to the grocery store or going to campus and things like that. So that was some hard conversations to have. And then friends, it's kind of neutral. I mean, I'm not friends with racist people, so it was not really a problem with them. I mean, it was just like we're here, this is what we can do. Like, we've waited. We want to protest. Yeah.
And do you feel like it had any community impacts?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe more so for people, I think, within the black community, seeing that we do care. And, like, it's a college town, and there were a lot of, like, college kids there, and they're like, maybe this generation can do something that we couldn't do, and things like that. And then for us, like, we weren't really sure how many people would show up, and I was like, oh, there are a lot of people here in this community who actually care, because, like, it's a small town, and I'm like, who's actually going to show up? But it was a good number, and I was like, oh, well, people care about important things here.
If you had to guesstimate about how many people would you say that you saw while you were out protesting, like a rough number?
I would say the whole time we were there, maybe like 100 to 1,000 at tops, yeah.
Okay. So moving back towards the media, do you think that the media was accurate in their detailing of the events and attitudes of protesters based on your experiences here in Richmond? And when I say media, it could be larger news outlets like Fox, or it could be the media such as your phone, but just kind of preface which it is and how those perceptions were.
Specifically to Richmond's protests, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just specifically to your firsthand experiences.
Like, on social media, it was really positive. I don't know if it was on the news. It may have been. But I was, like, didn't want to watch the news anymore at that point. But social media was really positive. Like, like, friends and, like, people of friends would post, like, pictures from the movement and things like that. And it overall was really positive. They're just like, we had all these people come out, and like, these are things you could share as resources and things like that.
And then did you see any media depictions talking about looting, burning, violence, anything like that circulating?
Not about Richmond, but yeah. About like Minneapolis was really bad.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't see any looting, burning, destruction of property in Richmond?
No.
So, have your feelings about the protest and the goals of the movement changed since the summer of 2020?
No.
How do you feel about the protest today?
I feel good about it. I still think it was important, and I wish I would have gone to more, but yeah.
Do you feel like the protest as a whole, especially in the state of Kentucky, seeing as we were one of the places that a really big pivotal moment happened, do you feel like it had a big impact on you and society in general?
Yeah. For me, it was people caring and not just hiding behind a phone. Like, you can say, oh, share this, post this however much you want, but you're not, like, physically going to show up and, like, support these people. And I think, personally, that was a lot for me to see how many people that I cared about cared for this. Because at that point, it wasn't really a conversation being had, because, I don't know, I don't really bring it up. You don't really bring it up until something really bad happens. But to see that how many people did care, I was like, oh, maybe we're the ones that can do something about this, our generation as a whole. And then, like, society-wise, I think it did. Or I'd like to believe that it did. I think more people are aware of what's happening. Like I said, there was video evidence. There was, like, evidence of, like, medical, like, crime scene investigators for Brianna's case. And so, like I said, there's no denying what happened. And so people know that it's out there and that it is happening and that there's things we could do to fix it, but it's not necessarily in civilian hands to do anything about it other than spread word of awareness. But I think, yeah, I think it did change society, and if they have to step on eggshells to make the public happy, then that's what they're going to have to do, the people that are funding the police or the police, until things are changed or they've proven that it's changed.
Definitely. And then one more thing, which I've asked in a number of interviews now, do you know anything about Brianna's Law? It was it was a law that was put into place in quite a few states and cities regarding what happened with her death. Do you know anything about it?
Yeah, it's, so they used to be allowed in some places to do, like, a no-knock warrant, for arrest, and so essentially they don't knock and they walk into a place and then can just arrest a person. And so in those places where it was passed, you have to, like, knock and, like, say your name, like, police officer or whoever, and, like, this is what we're here for, like, we need this person. And so you can't just, like, barge into an establishment and arrest people.
Alright, are there any thoughts you'd like to share, or any topics you'd like to revisit, or is there anything that you would like to discuss that we haven't covered as we come to a close?
No, I just hope that we're not fighting the same battle 50 years from now, and that we could have been the ones that changed things for the better.
Definitely. Well, thank you for talking to me.